Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is the Hometown Roofing Pop and Pony Podcast, presented by Hometown Roofing. Put your trust in us and powered by Bowser Chevrolet. Here's Bob Pompieni from KDKA-TV and Andrew Filippone from 93.7 The Fan.
We are so happy to have with us Hall of Famer Rick Barry, one of the best in the game, and a man who I think should be a foul shooting consultant by so many people in basketball. I don't understand it because I would be, if it was me, the first guy I would call is Rick
Barry. Well, how about Pitt? That's why they lost to Miami in the ACC tournament. They were like 3 of 12 from the free throw line, which to me is just unacceptable that an ACC team would shoot like that, Bob.
Rick, I know you do a lot of things. How much would you charge for that? My goodness, if I were a foul shooter at any level, I'd say, Rick, help me out, because you were one of the pure guys, but you did it in a very unorthodox way.
Yeah, well, the problem is that for some reason, the players have an aversion to it, and I guess they feel the same way that I felt when my dad, when I was in high school, said, son, I think you should try the underhanded free throw, which is the way he shot when he played semi-pro and coached. And I say, well, hey, Dad, I can't do that. Everybody's going to make fun of me, because back then, that's the way the girls shot. But the girls don't shoot that way anymore. So what the hell difference does it make what you do at the free throw line? Isn't it the result that really matters?
Right.
I mean, my son Canyon, who does it, my son Brent did it in college and actually shot in the high 80s. I don't know why he switched, but he still was a really good free throw shooter up in the 80s. But my son this year just played in the G League and finished the season. He was perfect from the free throw line. He didn't miss a free throw and shot 100%. So I just don't understand it. I mean, how do you live with yourself, seriously, when you're playing a sport where the only time during the course of a game you have the same distance, the same size ball, the same size basket, no one's trying to prevent you from doing it by defending you, and you can't make 4 out of every 5? You should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah. I'm with you, Rick. You said aversion to it because of you're saying the optics of it don't look right. I mean, that's...
Yeah, well, it's just the people, they look at it and they see it and they hear everybody, oh, the granny style and everything, and all, oh, it looks that way. You know, I mean, you know, Shaq said he'd rather shoot 0 than shoot that way.
Wow.
What is the mindset behind that? I don't understand. I mean, the whole object is to make the highest percentage you can make. And it's the only part of the game of basketball where you can be totally selfish and help your team.
Rick Barry's one of those guys, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know, one of the best in the game, Hall of Famer, top 50 all time, won a championship with Golden State, and since then they have won more because of Steph Curry and company. I want to get your thoughts, though, on Pete Maravich, because I know you probably, more than any of us, I'm from Aliquippa, Pennsylvania. Pete Maravich was born there. Yes.
It was a big deal.
But he was so far ahead of his time. Rick, Pete Maravich, if he were playing today, what would he be like?
Well, I mean, the guys today, a lot of them do the kind of stuff that Pete did, which was unusual, the way he could handle the ball and the things that he could do. But nowadays, it changed. Hell, when I was playing, I was the first point forward. Everybody said, man, Rick Barry could really handle the ball. I could dribble righty, lefty, and a crossover. That was the extent of my ball handling skills, and everybody raved about it. To be honest, if I was playing today, I would have to be a better ball handler. I would have to practice it. But what does that take? That just takes hours and hours in the facility where you can dribble the basketball, do all of the different drills they have, two ball drills. You can learn to be an outstanding ball handler just by putting the time and effort into it. And, you know, Pete obviously would have still been a great player today. The problem with Pete was that he never played, I don't think, on the right team to utilize his skills and talents to their fullest. I had the pleasure of getting to know Pete, and we actually went on a tour after we retired over to Asia with Phil Jackson and Bobby Dandridge and a bunch of other guys. Mm-hmm. And it was really a lot of fun. And you know, Pete, in fact, one game, Phil Jackson, I said, Phil, we're playing the Taiwanese national team. I said, look, they're playing the 2-1-2 zone. Let me play point, because I was, you know, way taller than those guys. I said, Pete, I'm just going to come down and I'm going to go hard and split the two guys at the top. Just go in the seam on either side, and you're going to be wide open. So I think I had 16 assists in the game, and 14 of them were to Pete. So I mean, we just had a good time. Pete was a heck of a shooter, an amazing scorer. If they had the 3-point shot back when he played, he might have been able to score 50 points a game.
How about you with a 3-point shot? You never had it, did you? No.
Well, but I had the shot in the ABA and did it. I got up to being a 33% three-point shooter, which is equivalent to 50 from twos, which is good. You know, the break-even point is where you go, not the break-even, but the acceptable is 30%. 30%, if you're below 30%, you have no business ever shooting unless the clock's running out. Mm-hmm. 33 is, you know, is good. But if I were playing today, I would not be satisfied unless I was a 40% or better three-point shooter.
Rick, what was Maravich? There's been a lot of discussion over the years about the influence his dad had on him and the way he pushed him and the type of player he created in his son. That, you know, about, you know, maybe the game being about him, you know, him being the center of attention, that sort of thing. You buy into those theories with Pete? You obviously know him much better than the two of us.
No. Pete's dad just tried to, you know, teach him and make him to be as good as he could be, and he made him into a unique player. I mean, there was nobody like Pete when he played. The guy put up numbers that were insane. He could handle and do things with the basketball that players back in those days never did. And then all of a sudden, it became, you know, the in vogue thing to do. Now the problem is there's too damn much dribbling. I mean, these guys dominate the basketball, and I always tell my players when I coach in the minor leagues, I said, "How do you expect to throw a pass if you're dribbling the ball all the time?" Now, for a point guard, it's one thing, because he's looking to do that and he's watching carefully. That's his role, or at least it used to be, but of course now there's the scoring point guard. Give me the passing point guard. That's the guy I want to play with. And so, you know, now it's a situation where there's too much dribbling and you can't make a pass. I mean, when I got the ball on the wing, now guys get it. They're dribble, 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 dribble. That's what's happening. You can't be as effective dribbling the ball as you are if you have it in your hands and you're trying to beat your defender. Now, the problem is that you don't want to have the ball get locked up and tied down. That's what I love about my son, Canyon. He moves without the ball. You get it. You see your defender. You make a quick move. You try to use your first dribble to get by him. You don't just hold on to the ball and make the offense stagnant. If you can't do something really quickly with the basketball as far as attacking the basket and driving or getting off a shot, pass the ball and move and cut. That's fun to watch. I just saw something I got from somebody, some highlights and stuff of the Celtic teams with Bird and McHale and Parrish and those guys and Danny Age and Dennis Johnson. I mean, the way they passed the basketball and moved and cut, it was like that's what the Warriors did when they had that great run. That's the way the game was designed to be played. That's the way it's much more fun from the standpoint of a player and from a spectating standpoint to watch that kind of basketball. This one-on-one domination and holding the ball for 15 or 20 seconds of the possession, to me, is not fun to watch.
And Maravich got to Boston late, Rick. It would have been interesting had Auerbach had him earlier, don't you think?
Yeah, no question. He got there late on. I mean, there were a lot of – I tried to go. In fact, if they didn't – I was going to go play with Boston. At the end of my career, I had a knee operation in 1980 after the season was over, and I hadn't felt that good in over 10 years where I didn't have pain in my knee. And that summer, I had two young guys. I had Marcus Johnson and Walter Davis up at my basketball camp for kids, and we would scrimmage at lunchtime and with the counselors and let the kids watch. And I ate those guys lunch, and I was 36 years old at the time because I felt so good physically. I never played again because the league, this is how it changed. In 1980, the league cut the rosters to 11 to save money. How's that?
Wow.
Cut it to
11. Is that by
now
one guy?
15.
Is that one cut?
Now they got 15. They have 15 and two guys in the two guys that up in, you know, that are two-way players. They have 17 guys. And I was going to go with Boston and play because a lot of guys did it. Bill Walton did it. Scotty Wedman did it. Tiny Archibald did it. Pete did it. I was going to go and would have loved to have done that, been with Bird and McHale and those guys. It would have been awesome. But I never played again because the rosters got cut.
Thinking of Maravich. Rick, what do you think about the Euro step in basketball? And how?
Well, that's great if it's not a travel, but so many times it's a travel, it doesn't get away with it.
But you like the move itself.
I would love to have an extra step when I was playing.
Seems like everybody's like, doing it.
I would love to be able to carry the ball. The carrying that goes on with the basketball, with the way guys handle it and dribble it, it's ludicrous. I was just watching something the other night, one of the games. I turned them on and watch them. I said, oh my God. I mean, right in front of the official, it was such a blatant carry of the basketball, and they let him get away with it. And I blame the officials in the league for allowing this to happen. All of this stuff that takes place, the blame doesn't fall on the players. The blame falls on the officials for not going ahead and going according to the rule book. Same thing with moving screens. Hell, a couple of years back when I was doing a number of things and doing some radio shows, I charted a game between the Atlanta Hawks and the, I think it was Chicago Bulls. There were 59 moving screens that weren't called. 59.
Wow. That's something. Speaking of today's game, you like how it's, in at least in the NBA, it's all three? It's can you make the three, defend
like
the three?
I don't like the all three stuff. I mean, it's fine to do that. I mean, you got great shooters and it works, you know, nicely, but you live and die with the three. I mean, it cost the Warriors a championship against Cleveland. They died with the 3-point shot when Draymond got thrown out and suspended for a game. In game seven, the last 4 minutes and 20 seconds of that championship series, the game seven, probably is the worst offensive performance in the history of NBA game sevens. There was one basket scored, a three-pointer by Kyrie Irving, and one of two free throws by LeBron James. Everything the Warriors did was from three-point range. They missed everything, and it cost them a championship.
Wow, that's amazing, and it's true. Not many teams can live with a three. I guess Golden State is probably one of the
Well, there's no
few.
Back-to-the-basket big man anymore either.
No,
you know, that's
well,
completely
all changed.
Whoa. Here's the thing. See, everybody says that. I'm serious. I'm not saying to make you look bad and stuff. You don't have to have a big man to play and post
sure.
up. I used to post up a 6'1" guard when I played, and I was just talking to Baron Davis the other day. Baron, if I was coaching you when you were playing, I said I would have posted you up because he's a big, strong guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was a beast in the post. And what? Who better to have if they're going to have to come and double you than your point guard passing the ball?
Right.
Out?
Yeah, I'm not saying that back to the basketball or post up is inefficient. I'm just saying that the 7-foot guy that you dump the ball into and run the offense through, that's pretty much extinct, is what I meant by that,
well,
right?
Yeah, you got Jokic now. That's why I love watching him play.
Well, he plays away from the basket a lot, too.
Well, no, not all the time. Not all the time. He gets down in there, and he's a lot of time he's at the top of the key,
yep.
and they run stuff, and they put
High
other
post.
People down in the post. I
yep.
mean, so he's more like a center. That's the kind of center you want to have. You don't want to have a guy that can only score down in the block three,
True.
4 feet from the basket. I mean, he's got all of the skills necessary, and he can pass the ball, and he sees the court. I mean, he's got a bunch of triple-doubles already this season, and that's a team to watch out for. They didn't start off really well, but they were playing really well going into the break, so keep an eye on that team the way they play.
It's the Hometown Roofing Pop and Pony podcast powered by Bowser Chevrolet.
We're speaking with Rick Barry here, one of the best ever to play the game, and I want to ask you about the salaries and what's happened to them, and what was the most you ever made when you played, and do you ever think, man, I was born a little too soon?
No, I think that all the time. I said to my mom, thank God rest her soul, when she's alive, I said, Mom, why couldn't you have just waited, you know, about 10 years to have me? I mean, I would have, you know, I could have bought you the house you wanted. I could have done so many other things for you. It's astonishing. The lowest paid guy in the NBA this season will make twice as much money as I made in the best year I ever had, and this is a guy that never plays.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, he doesn't even play.
Rick, speaking of, you know, we've got a lot of probably younger listeners that don't remember when Pittsburgh had a pro basketball team, Pipers, Condors here. Take us back in time. What was ABA basketball like? Give people a sense for what the American Basketball Association was all about
when
you played in it.
It was a wide open game. It was, you know, a perimeter game. I mean, obviously, it was kind of like what's happening to the NBA now. It's becoming a 3-point shooting game.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody jacking up the ball from outside, but they had some great players. I mean, the Pittsburgh Pipers had Connie Hawkins, who was a great, great player, and then they had another guy named John Brisker, who was just a crazy guy you never wanted to turn your head. He was a tough, tough guy. In fact, I heard later on that he actually became a mercenary and got killed over in Africa or something. But yeah, he was quite the character, to say the least. But yeah, it was very interesting. I also played against the Pittsburgh, you know, University of Pittsburgh, Brian Generalovich. How's that?
Oh, I remember that? Brian Generalovich.
Played against him in we had a Christmas tournament and they came down and we played against them down in the Miami tournament that we had at Christmas time. Mm-hmm. So, it's interesting. But, yeah, it was fun basketball. There's no question about it.
Was it on par with the NBA product at the time, Rick? I mean, as a big, you were obviously a huge draft pick. No? Okay.
No, it wasn't on par overall because we didn't have any really big guys until Artis Gilmore came in. I mean, one of the guys that did something was Dan Issel, but he was more like a power forward. Mm-hmm. And then Artis came into the league, and Artis is a major factor there, and they started to get some other guys. But they just didn't have the quality of the big men that they had. So, but nowadays, like you just mentioned, all the 7-footers want to shoot 3-point shots. I mean, they want to become 3-point shooters, and they don't want to go in down under and play inside. I still think inside out is the most effective way to play. If you've got somebody who can dominate inside, you can still create all kinds of opportunities for yourself on the perimeter, and you can always get up a 3-point shot. I have a hard time watching a lot of teams. Although I will say this, recently I've noticed that more teams are passing the ball a lot. But the thing is, most of the time it's just passing it around to get a 3-point shot, mm-hmm. as opposed to passing, cutting, going to the basket, trying to get the easy basket inside. It's more designed to get a 3-point opportunity.
Rick, you were unique in the fact that you led the NCAA, if I'm not mistaken, the ABA and the NBA, all in scoring. I don't know how many people in the history of the game have ever
done that. Nobody's done it. Nobody ever do it again.
Wow. Correct, because they're not bringing the ABA back, Bob. I think.
No, but I mean, even NBA and NCAA to lead both. I mean, it's
absolutely.
Pretty, but you also averaged 40. I was reading, I wasn't aware of this. In a final series, you averaged 40 a game.
Yeah, it was a record. It was a record for many decades. Michael broke it, but the only reason he broke it is Michael got to play in an overtime game. And if it wasn't for the overtime game, I still would have had the record. Mm-hmm. I didn't play in an overtime game, so he got a little extra time and scored a bunch of points in there that put him just barely past me. But that doesn't matter. The whole idea, it's not the records that mean anything. It's whether you win or lose that really mm-hmm. matters. In fact, I just found something out. Because the statistical thing that is taking place over in the world of sports these days,
yep.
in the last 5 or 6 years, I have learned more things that I accomplished in my career that I had no idea I had done, because everybody comes up with these things. All of a sudden, hey, so-and-so just did this, and he joins the company of Rick Barry and this guy and that guy. Oh, really, I did that. That's interesting. I mean, I had no idea, because I only play. I played to win, and that's all I cared about. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think I have the all-time career record for average in NBA finals.
Wow. Rick, where do you when you are asked to put your 2 cents into the Michael Jordan, LeBron debate or discussion, what do you usually say?
There is no discussion, and there always is a discussion. Everybody's who's the greatest of all time. I said, hell, when I played, the GOAT was the guy that screwed up the game. The guy who was the greatest wasn't the greatest of all time. Uh-huh. And in team sports, I mean, people just have to get this. I go nuts when I listen to the talking heads on TV, and when I hear players, especially past players. You can never pick the best player in a team sport. You have to have a discussion, which could be a really interesting one. Who's the best at each position? Because the skills required to play each position are different. So you can't say that Michael is better than LeBron because Michael played a different position than LeBron. I look at Michael as a 2 who could play 1. I look at LeBron as a 3 who could also play 2 or 1. But he's a 3. Okay, mm-hmm. He's the best 3 that's ever played a game. Okay, this guy's amazing and stuff. Although all of his skills aren't the same, there's never the great shooter and comparable to a guy like Bird, but he's still, I think, the greatest 3 to play. Michael's the greatest 2, and the story makes it simple.
Who's the best 5?
Will Chamberlain.
Oh.
Not even close.
Not even. I would agree with that. A lot of people don't want to bring that name up because they're focused on current times.
Will Chamberlain was. They start bringing up other names. I say, are you out of your freaking mind? I mean, if you just look at what Wilt had done, Wilt was in a class by himself. I mean, there isn't anybody even reasonably close to him. Bill Russell had the most impact of helping a team win championships, but look at the players he was surrounded with.
Sure.
I mean, he played with some of the greatest players of all time, and he was an amazing form defensively and all, but all the skills required to play the center position, you can't pick anybody better than Will Chamberlain.
Wow.
Rick, I want to ask you this because I find it interesting, and the way the game has evolved, it's almost like a pickup game. In other words, everybody talks big 3. Every city has a big 3.
Well, guys sit out until they get traded.
Now, Harden, what he did, I thought was reprehensible. He's a great player, but, I mean, he just forced an issue. A lot of guys do that. How do you think about that when you hear these kind of things happening? It almost takes the power away from a general manager.
Yeah, well, what I think is, Wilt, I got to know Wilt after I had retired quite well, and I really, really liked Wilt a lot. Wilt wrote a book, I think it was the last book he did. It was called The Inmates Are Running the Asylum, which is really kind of true. It's just incredible the power that they have and they now give to players. And, you know, they bend and kowtow to them and, you know, try to do whatever they can do. But guys do it. If you don't want to play, you can make a stink and do it. They'll probably wind up trading you. What I said years ago, I remember when Derek Coleman was doing stuff with the Nets, I said, you know, the greatest thing they could do, bring him in with his agent and whoever the hell it is they want to have in there and say, here's the deal. We have tried to get you to conform to play the game the way that we as a team and an organization want the game to be played. You seem to have another agenda. So here's the deal. We don't want to see you again. We'll notify you when we'll find some team who was stupid enough to take you and your lousy attitude. And if we can do that, we'll let you know, and then you can go and play for them. And just tell us where you want your checks at. We'll bite the bullet. We'll swallow it. But you're not going to play basketball anymore.
Rick, I want to ask you about another old-timer, you know, somebody that, you know, everyone here knows the name and knows the logo but might not have the stories that you have. How about Jerry West for a second? When Rick Barry hears that name come up, what do you make of him as an all-time great?
Well, I got to be friends with Jerry and got to know him as a rookie, and he was very helpful to me in some of the conversations we had in getting prepared to be able to play in the NBA, but, you know, the logo himself. But Jerry was the greatest two-guard until Michael came along.
Okay.
It's pretty simple.
What made him that kind of player, Rick, for people that weren't able to watch him?
Outstanding, like Michael, he was good on both ends of the floor, really knew the game, mm-hmm. was an outstanding, you know, shooter from, you know, we didn't have the three-point shot, outstanding shooter, could get to the basket, was a great free throw shooter. He was just an outstanding all-around basketball player. And, you know, his nickname was Mr. Clutch, you know, so, I mean, that speaks for itself, but without question. He was the best two until Michael came along. And, you know, Michael, I still think, you know, is the best two without question.
All right, Rick, before we let you go, I'm a passionate golfer. Andrew is kind of medals in it. But I was really intrigued with the fact that you, and from what I understand, you kind of just picked up golf because you were inspired to compete in a long drive contest. Is that how that went? And you end up winning four of them worldwide? How does that happen?
Yeah, I played golf. I got introduced to it when I was in college. It never was something that was a passion of mine. It's too hard to be fun. Mm-hmm. Golf is way too difficult to be fun. Especially if you're a perfectionist, it's very frustrating. The better I got to be a one handicap. The better I got, the more frustrated I got, and the more time you have to spend to keep yourself at that level. But it's an incredibly challenging game. I have the utmost respect for professional golfers because I really got to understand the game. I broadcast the game for years doing it and got to know a lot of the greatest players, and Nicklaus and Palmer and Player and so many of the guys that I know. Ray Floyd's a dear friend of mine. I know so many of those pro golfers. What they do is astonishing. There's not another sport I know of where you have to go out 4 days and be at your best to have a chance to be a champion and win that event. It's just so, so demanding. And it's so much mental to it. I mean, it's just an incredible, difficult game. In fact, I was with Jack Nicklaus, I think it was almost like maybe a year ago. I happened to be with Jack and talking about some other things. And I said, Jack, can you correct me if I'm wrong? I'm telling everybody that golf is a sport that can never be mastered. Am I right or wrong? You said, absolutely correct. You just can't master the game. It's just too difficult. But so what I missed was the competition when I retired. People ask me, do you miss playing basketball? I say, no. And they look strangely at me. I say, I don't miss it because I never think about it. Why would I want to think about something that I would be terribly depressed knowing that I'll never get to do this again for the rest of my life when I love the game so much and just got so much joy out of putting on a uniform and going out and competing? And I missed the competition. So I was introduced to someone to show me a different type of swing, whatever, and to get into golf for long driving. They had the long driving competition. And so I got into that, and I wound up winning four competitions. I should have won six. I came really close in two other ones, but I kept winning, you know. But they got rid of that division because I kept getting older, and it was the old farts playing, and they didn't really care about it. But it was still fun. I mean, I got the butterflies, you know, ready to go out, go to compete. And, you know, even at my advanced age, I can still hit it over 300 yards.
So you don't play the senior tees then?
Oh, God, no. No. Well, if I was going to go out, I play the regular tees normally when I play, yeah.
Do everybody a favor.
Hey, Rick, thanks so much for doing this. The
hey, real
back.
Quickly, tell anybody if they're interested, if they're interested at all, there's an opportunity if you have some issues. Go to GoSleeves, SLEEVES.com /RB24. GoSleeves/RB24. These are some amazing things. I don't even have a major problem with my knees, but they have knee sleeves and they have stuff for your calves and other items.
Oh, I could use that.
Yeah, I could use some.
Let me tell you something, guys. These things are good. They got Kinesio tape in them. They're the best things I've seen. I've tried a bunch of stuff. If you go there and go gosleeves.com/RB24, you'll be able to go there and be able to get it.
You've been listening to the Hometown Roofing Pump and Pony Podcast. Hometown Roofing. Put your trust in us. Powered by Bowser Chevrolet. Join us each week for another Hometown Roofing Pump and Pony Podcast.